You are listening to Dishin' and Swishin', the world of women's hoops, on hoopfeed.com.
Hi, everybody. This is David Single, your host for Dishin' and Swishin', the world of women's hoops, on Hoopfeed each and every week. And one of the stories that people have been following all year is the Tulsa Shock, with the additions and changes that have been made to the team. And they've stumbled a little bit out of the box, but there's still great reason for optimism in Tulsa. And I'm pleased to have one of the new players on the Tulsa Shock with me now, and that's Candace Wiggins. Candace, welcome back to Dishin' and Swishin'. How are you today?
Oh, I'm so great. Thanks for having me.
First question I want to ask you, for everybody that's been wondering, you know, you started out, unfortunately, game one, you have that ankle sprain. Those can linger and they affect your game, you know, for extended periods of time, obviously. How's that feeling and how are you feeling overall?
Well, I think you're right. You know, ankle sprains are always tough because, you know, you just want to get your balance back. But I think I've been pretty good. I've been, you know, doing all the proper formalities, like icing like crazy, like a maniac. And so that's really been good to me. But, you know, it's still lingering a little bit. But I would say that it's not really something that I'm even thinking about anymore.
You know, one thing that has been the recurring theme to so many different teams this season has been the injuries. And
yeah.
The Fever are missing a bunch. Connecticut is missing a bunch. And you guys certainly have gotten it with you getting hurt. And, of course, Liz Cambage being hurt and Tiffany Jackson-Jones coming back and she's hurt. And at least now LaQuinta Williams is back, has been cleared. So, I mean, it's got to be tough just practicing.
Oh, yeah, it has been pretty rough for us. You know, and you can't even, you know, predict them or anything like that. So we're just trying to just all get healthy because it's really, really important in our season, especially our WNBA season. It's so short. So, yeah, everyone's just kind of focusing on doing what they can until we get everybody back. But it's kind of a scramble because you never really, you know, it's like once we get in a groove, it's like, bam, someone else bites the dust. So we're just trying to get us all together.
Now, the other thing is I want to know who in the front office pissed off the WNBA league office that they gave you six games this fast and five on the road.
I know. So I've been trying to figure that out. Once you find out who that is. I think it was a good challenge, though, for us. You know, I call these first six games, they've been like growing pains, you know, for this young organization. We're the youngest team in the league, you know. And it was kind of just like a shock. Just to start the season like this, it's such a different, you know, challenge that we've had to face than I've had to in years prior, especially, like I said, because we're young and trying to figure each other out. But at the same time, I think it's good. I think that you have to have these kind of challenges in order to grow. So hopefully that this will, you know, this will mean something later in the season.
How has it been an adjustment for you from coming off the bench on a team that was so loaded with experienced talent in Minnesota to being one of the, you know, real veteran leaders sort of on this team? Sorry, I don't mean to offend you by calling you a veteran.
No, that's not.
You're a young one.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Earn that.
It's got to be a lot different adjusting to being, not only just being in the new place, but the new role and all of that.
The new role, I would say more so than the new role, though, because, I mean, it's a role that I'm accustomed to, I think. But it's really just playing the players, the new players, the new coach, you know, the new everything. It's like we're all trying to just, like, get to know each other and play together. And the teams that we're playing against, especially early in the season, the teams that we've been playing against have been teams that have been playing together for a couple of seasons. And you can tell they have those little kinks out of, you know, knowing where people are and stuff and adjusting. And, I mean, everyone on our team is like, not everyone, but I would say a huge majority of our team is new. You know, it's like we haven't played together. I played with Kaylin in college. You know, Skylar's like my best friend, but it's different when you're playing, you know, on the court together. So I think we're trying to get our groove, and we're getting there. And the cool thing about it, though, is that everyone is so positive and optimistic, and with that positive energy that we're bringing along, it's going to happen. It's so inevitable, and I think it's going to happen a lot sooner than we even anticipate.
Well, I think that people have to realize that, you know, for playing 5 of 6 on the road and taking a couple of those games to overtime, considering the injuries in particular, I mean, this is not a bad start for this team at all.
Right, and it's like we're our worst enemies. We're like our hardest critics. So we're like super upset about those overtime losses. We feel like, you know, we could have won those games. But I think you're right. I think this is a really good start for us, and we just have to keep building on it and just start making waves, just start getting on a run, start going on a roll.
Now, speaking of tough starts, now you mentioned your best friend is Skylar. Now, Skylar has never lost this many games in a season, and she's struggled a bit with the offensive end of the game in particular right now. Her shooting has been a bit off. How do you get her? You've been there. You came in from Stanford and being so successful to a Minnesota team that wasn't really riding very high at that point. So you've been through this. What do you say to Skylar to keep her on an even keel and remind her that it's in for the long haul when she's not used to this?
Well, you know, we talk to each other. We, like, motivate each other a lot of times. But I've been in the situation, like you said, that similar situation that she's been in. So I really just try to tell her, you know, stories of, like, when I was a rookie and, like, kind of my experience and just share my experience with her. And then also, but we're both in, like, kind of a new situation. So, like I said, it's really kind of both encouragement. I haven't been shooting very well either, but I kind of just try to stay upbeat and positive and just tell Skylar, like, just all she needs is, you know, is just to keep on playing her game, doing the things that, you know, got her here, and just be having fun. I think that's the biggest thing that we talk about, Skylar and I, is, like, we just need to have fun on the court, you know, and just have, like, play with an insane amount of joy. So that, you know, all the shooting and stuff, if you stress out and press on your shots, which is what we've been doing, both of us, then it's just, it is never going to, you know, you got to be relaxed. So we just need to relax, have fun, and we recognize that this is such an amazing opportunity that we both have. So I think you're going to see a difference in our posture, in our body language, and just in our energy and having more fun. And that's going to result, in my opinion, to better shooting percentage.
When it was time, when you were looking at the options, the possibilities at the end of last year, you know, with free agency coming and Minnesota being in a cap situation and needing to make some moves too, was the fact that Skylar was a possibility here an opportunity that interested you?
Definitely, I think. Mm-hmm. Definitely a huge bonus. But you know, you never know what's gonna happen. Like, I didn't know if Skylar was gonna get drafted to Chicago or not. You know, so, but it was really, it was a great situation for me. It was like a win-win. But, yeah, I think that was, you know, that was kind of a cool little bonus, you know.
Now, you get, for the first time, you get to play against your old teammates. Now, is that something that you're looking forward to, getting a shot at Minnesota?
Most definitely.
You think Coach Reeve has a few things designed to try and keep you away from your favorite spot?
I don't know. No idea. We'll see.
Now, this is the start of a nice homestand, though. But tough teams, Minnesota, Phoenix, Chicago, Seattle come in. But the BOK rocks. So this should be a great opportunity for you guys to get in front of your home fans. I'm sure you're looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, we only have played one game, so we're definitely, definitely, definitely ready to protect home court and just get it started, like, get a run going and making it where, you know, the other opponents hate playing there. You know, so I haven't played in BOK in, like, an official game yet. This is, like, my first, like, home game, so it's kind of fitting. But, yeah, for sure this stretch of four games that we're playing at home are crucial right now in the season, and I'm really – optimistic about it.
Well, Candace, I want to thank you for taking some time, and I want to wish you the best of luck in getting healthy, both you and the entire Shock team. Let's get Liz back out there, and then Tiffany,
right.
And then let's see the team that you guys envisioned when you started this thing.
Absolutely, yes, for sure.
Thanks again, Candace, and good luck.
Thanks, David. Always a pleasure. Take care.
This is Candace Wiggins, and you are Dishing and Swishing.
Hi, everybody. This is David Siegel, your host on Dishin' and Swishin' Week. And we are dishing with Doug this week. We're going to get Debbie Antonelli on for a second segment that we have introduced, where we're spending some time talking about the latest and greatest going around the horn in women's basketball. And Doug Feinberg of the AP is our guest this week. Doug, how you doing?
Pretty good, Dave. How you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. Thank you for taking some time out of your busy schedule during the NBA playoffs to talk to us. Now, it's been an interesting week in the WNBA, and one of the things that has clearly become a point of discussion and conjecture is the continuing saga of the Chicago Sky's Epiphany Prince, where first, you know, the team starts off great. She's playing out of her mind. Then she has to go to Russia. She injures her ankle. The Sky struggles a bit. And now, you know, from what I understand, there's some other things going on.
Yeah, she obviously was playing really well for Chicago and then had a commitment to go play for the Russian national team as part of her Russian contract and the chance to play for them in the World the next year and the Olympics in a couple of years. So she went over to play with them in the EuroBasket tournament and then sprained her ankle the first game, came back to get a second opinion from the doctors in Chicago, the guy who took care of her injury last year when she got hurt. And the question was whether or not she'd be able to go back to Russia to play for the actual tournament, which starts, I believe, later this week or early next week. And the latest is she'll actually be going back to play. So she'll have a chance to play for Russia in that tournament, help them qualify for the Worlds next year. And, you know, it's good for Russia and bad for the Sky because the good news is she's healed. Her ankle's feeling a lot better and she's finishing up rehab and can play. But you never know how strong it's going to be, and she's going back there. And you know what? She's missing six or seven games with a team that's really, really good right now. And, you know, maybe it's good to get some other players like Courtney Vandersloot and Elena Deladon some more experience and more time. But that's a really good team, and they could be undefeated right now. They lost at San Antonio, but they could easily be undefeated right now with a key stretch of games coming up, and they could probably put some distance between themselves and the rest of the conference if she was still there and healthy.
Yeah, but you know, the thing is, you look at that, never mind, they did lose that one game. They came back and they won against San Antonio well, but that was a struggle too, that Deladon had her first game-winning appearance. Granted, it was in the foul line, but it was still, she won that game at the end. And so the Sky didn't exactly knock everybody over like they did in their first three games.
Yeah, very true. And to be honest, I mean, Elena's going to be a great player for them, and she's a perfect fit for that system. And when they're healthy and playing together, you have a really good off-guard in Prince who can score. You have a great scorer in Elena who can play in the wing, play in the post, and you have a really good post player in Sylvia Fowles. So you have the three aspects of a really good team, not to mention Courtney Vandersloot is a really good player at the point and is developing her game. So they have a lot of options. Without Prince there to break down defenses, it makes them a little bit less strong on the offensive end, but come down the road when she's back in July and such, they're going to be a really good team. I mean, they might be the favorite right now to win the Eastern Conference just because of injuries like Indiana, New York struggle lately, Connecticut struggles. I mean, they're going to be, I think, one of the legitimate contenders for a WNBA championship this year.
Talking about Piff going away, now the other thing is they're tied right now in first place with the Atlanta Dream in the East, and now Sancho Little is going to be leaving as well. And she being healthy is off to a great start as well.
She is, and that seems a little bit of a surprise. I think no one kind of knew what was going to happen with them, with Williams taking over full-time this year, how the chemistry is going to develop. I mean, Little's a great player. Angel McCutcheon's a great player. You're just not sure what was going to happen there, and they're off to this great start. They lost to the Liberty the other day. New York's a very tough team to beat at home, it seems, this year, but it's going to be interesting that Eastern Conference, I think, with the top couple teams and even the bottom teams are really good. I mean, if you said to people coming into the season, who's going to be the top teams in the East, I think Indiana and Connecticut would be up there, yet they're sitting near the bottom of the pack right now.
You know, the fascinating stat that I saw about Atlanta is right now they have the number 1, 2, and 3 player in the league in steals, in McCautry, Harrington, and Little.
Defense wins championships, right? Isn't that what all the wise coaches always say? They're good. I mean, they're quick. They're quick with their hands off the ball, And you know, steals create easy baskets because of turnovers, and that's ways you can win games. I mean, there's not that much difference in the talent, I think, in the 12 teams in the league. Everyone has got some players who can play, and it's a matter of who can get that good night and get those extra sort of cheap baskets, so to speak, off of the defense, and that's what Atlanta's been able to do so far, except against New York the other night.
You know, one thing that you mentioned was you talked about Indiana and Connecticut being two of the teams that are on the bottom right now. And, you know, one thing that I wanted to talk about was the surprising start on the negative side of a couple of these teams. You got Indiana and Connecticut sitting there right now. And then you also have on the other side, you've got Phoenix, who got off to their terrible start. Now, Phoenix finally wins a game, but strangely enough, it's without Griner. Is there something that we should be making out of the way that the Mercury is made up right now?
Well, let's talk about the first one of the Eastern Conference with Connecticut and Indiana. And it's very simple. They're both been hit hard by injury. Indiana's missed three players right now. Katie Douglas missed the game against New York because of a back injury. And it's just not been the same. She just missed the Phoenix game when they lost. Indiana's still very good. But as Lynn Dunn said, she can't play her starters 30, 35 minutes a game right now and burn them out later on when the kids that are hurt come back healthy, because they'll still have nothing left at that point. They're still a very good team. They actually have had the lead, I think, in most of the games, but just down the stretch, they've just run out of gas. So I think that's a big part of the Eastern Conference as far as Indiana and Connecticut. I mean, Renee Montgomery's out with an ankle injury now. Tan White's hurt. I mean, they have injury problems that are causing those two teams to not be where people expected them to be after the first couple weeks of the season. Phoenix is different. I think it's an adjustment thing. I mean, it's a tough situation for Phoenix because everyone knows coming in that when they're healthy, running that up-tempo style with Dee and with Penny and Duana Bonner and Candace Dupree, they're really, really tough to guard. No one wants to run up and down the floor with them for 40 minutes. That's just not smart if you're a coach of the opposing team. Throw in a 6'8" kid and Brittany Griner is really, really talented, but that style may not be to her liking or to her best suited for her talents. Then what do? I mean, it looked to me, watching the first couple games, that they were sort of slowing things down to get Griner involved in the offense, and that's just not Phoenix's style. So when they got the win the other day, they went back more that up-tempo, got up and down the court, and obviously they got victory out of the final score. I don't think it's a problem that can't be solved, but they have to kind of figure out what their identity is and see what goes from there. I mean, look, Diana Taurasi the other day was unbelievable. She was back to being the old D. The first couple of games, she was sort of passing up shots and not being herself on offense where, you know what, maybe she's trying to get Griner involved early on. So it's something that I think Coach Gamzee has to sort of adjust to and figure out what he wants to do as far as what's the identity of the Phoenix Mercury on offense. Up-tempo, go run and gun up and down the court, or slow it down, get your big kid involved, and see what goes from there.
Now, we talked about Phoenix and Taurasi winning that game, but there was one other thing that caught my eye in that victory, and that is I never realized how angry Candace Dupree can get in one moment and how her face can contort into strange angles until I saw the ref cam.
You know, that was a pretty innovative new thing that Toy, I guess you could call it, that the WNBA and ESPN and ABC played with. You know, I first saw it, and I'm like, what is this? I mean, it's something different when their first half, they were trying to adjust it, and just things didn't seem great with it. But it kind of grew on me. It was like one of those friends, like you see, like at first, like, why do I really hang out with this person? And then the more time you spend with them, like, wow, you know, they're kind of cool, and they're fun to hang with. I thought it was interesting. It was great that they caught the technical foul that Lamont Simpson called on Candace Dupree on the camera. So as you said, you got to see her up close and personal in a different angle. It was something new. I mean, whenever you have any sport or any camera and there's action involved running up and down the court, it's going to be shaky. That's probably not the best thing for TV. However, it during free throws, during conversations, during the technical foul, it put a different perspective. It was kind of neat, kind of fun. People seemed into it. It was a hit on Twitter. I mean, people were all talking about it all over the place, and it was hilarious and such. So I think it's going to grow. I'm not sure how much they're going to use it this year. I'm guessing that they'll probably bring it back maybe around the All-Star game, be a good spot for it, maybe a couple other times. But it was, you know, it's different. It's an innovation. It was neat. It was fun. People were talking about it. So from the WNBA standpoint, what more could you ask for?
Exactly. And that's the kind of thing, in my opinion, the league needs to be working for. You know, that it can't be the same old, because, you know, right now, especially with the NBA playoffs going on still, you know, if you're going to try and get an audience for basketball, women's style, you got to come up with something original and innovative, and they're trying to do that, and I give them a lot of credit for making changes or trying different things without, you know, really messing with the game itself.
Right. I mean, there was no, I thought they changed the rule or anything. They didn't have to go to it if it wasn't working out. It was something different. Fans are talking about it. You know what? That's all you can ask for. You're right. You're trying to get a market share or get new people involved, new interest. I don't think people really focused on the game as much afterwards. I mean, people knew Phoenix won, but for the most part, people were like, wow, what was the thing they were doing? What new angles, an official with a camera? So that kind of like, was with the talking points out of that game. I mean, sure, it was Phoenix won, Griner had the injury in her knee, what's going on with that? But there was also the talk about something that really didn't affect the game at all, and that was the camera. So that's something that was neat. People asked if the NBA might try doing that. People were joking whether Joey Crawford, the official, might try that for the NBA, which would be entertaining. So if they started a conversation about that, people don't have the WNBA, that's great for the league.
Now, another thing I wanted to bring up and discuss with you that seemed a little strange to me so far this year is the inequities in scheduling. That, you know, I don't recall, and you've been covering basketball for a long time, I don't recall a year where I've seen something like Tulsa having six games in while Minnesota has three games in. And while people look at Tulsa's schedule and comment that they're 1-5 and, you know, oh, you know, they're not achieving like people had thought. I mean, they've had one home game out of those six games too. I mean, this has been a ridiculous schedule for them.
Yeah, it's been somewhat unfair, you could say. I think by the time the Minnesota played its first game, Tulsa had already played three, which kind of boggles the mind. I mean, you could have wondered why maybe Minnesota didn't play that first weekend instead of Tulsa playing two games in 3 days. But I'm sure there's people who want to do the scheduling matrices and have a much better understanding of why they do things the way they do it. But I think, again, I could be wrong on this, and I haven't talked to people in the league, but I'm curious if most schedules, when they have to look at other things going on at the arena, and there's a chance that maybe with Oklahoma City potentially playing in the NBA playoffs further than they went, they couldn't get those home dates early on, so there's a chance maybe they were pushing it back so there wasn't going to be a chance for them to potentially have a conflict there, maybe. But, yeah, I mean, five out of the first six on the road doesn't seem fair to a young team. I mean, I guess it flips eventually that now they have, whatever, five or six at home, and they weren't that far off. I mean, look, that's a team that's 1-5 that lost three games in overtime. So they could easily be 4-2 right now, and you'd have a very different conversation with, wow, look at this young team, 4-2 right now with five of the first six games on the road. Look how excited they are. Look how good they could potentially be this year. And look at the great job that Kloppenberg's done with them and Skylar Diggins, you know, great rookie right there. So, I mean, a couple baskets fall the other way, we'd have a completely different conversation right now as far as Tulsa and what's going on with their scheduling and being fair or not fair. But it will all even out. I mean, obviously they'll play a bunch of games at home soon enough and hopefully have some success. And so they're not that far away. They're a young, exciting team, especially if Cam Bage comes back from her ankle injury soon.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, instead of 3-C, what's becoming a theme, unfortunately, in the WNBA this year is who are you not going to see? Because if you look around the league, now you start with just look at Tulsa, and you've got Cam Bage, Tiffany Jackson-Jones, and Wiggins got hurt and only missed one game, but she's sat out. You look at Phoenix, we still haven't seen Penny Taylor. Seattle, Bird and Jackson are sitting out the season. You know, then you continue up Indiana with Poland and Phillips and Davenport and Douglas and Connecticut with Lawson and Montgomery and White and New York now with Essence Carson. This is, and Cheryl Ford not playing yet this year. You know, L.A., Elena Beard sitting out a game. I mean, this has just been amazing with the amount of injuries, you know, six or seven games into the season.
Yeah, and also throwing Becky Hammon in San Antonio as another star who's been out with an injury. So I think part of it is wear and tear on the bodies. I mean, these women play year-round, a lot of them. So if you're playing for 12 months or 10 months, your body can take some punishment, and it catches up with you. I mean, some of those is fluke injuries that happens in every sport. But you have to wonder, I mean, people get older, bodies break down quicker, and the recovery factor of it. So, yeah, they're missing a lot of stars out there. You could make a pretty good – you could probably make an all-star team with all these players you named who are already out and missed six or seven games and are going to miss a lot more over the next month or two or even the season with Bird and Jackson and a few others. So it's unfortunate. I mean, there's obviously some really good talent out there, and it's exciting. I mean, everyone thought Seattle and San Antonio would be in real trouble as far as injuries go, and sure enough, they go out and beat teams. I mean, Seattle beat Phoenix and San Antonio beat L.A. So you have two teams that no one expected to really do anything this year. They've already pulled off victories. So there's always that next girl step up mentality that coaches talk about, and they've had to be able to do that, which is great for them and great for the league. But, yeah, you're missing some pretty good stars out there, and it's kind of sad. As great as she's been on TV for them, not seeing Sue Bird on the court, but just seeing her work for ESPN. And she's been a phenomenal announcer, bringing a different insight to the halftime analysis, but – you know, fans love to see her on the court actually playing basketball.
Isn't that the truth? Now, last topic ever. Now, mamas and dads, I guess if you want to have a basketball baby, you want to play on the 11th birthday, huh?
Yeah. It seems like this is the match day, is the day to have your baby if you want to be a pretty good basketball player, right? I mean, you have Maya Moore, you have Diane Taurasi, who are two obviously very, very good players, who are the best in the world. And then if you want to be a coach, you have Coach Ross of Los Angeles, and you have Coach Holly Warlick of Tennessee. So that's four right there. And then if you want to add into the mix, you have Gino Auriemma's mom. So that's like a fifth person with a basketball background or people know in the basketball world. So, heck, I don't know, it's, what, 9 months for a baby to be born. So you can do the math and figure out when it's a good time to procreate and create the next baby or the next basketball superstar.
And you're missing one more, the next generation, one of our favorite college players that we always talk about, Brittany Boyd's birthday is June 11th as well.
Oh, very nice. Good point. So that's another one right there. So June 11th, a day to have a basketball baby is the way to go. And actually, I think Joe Montana is born this day from a football standpoint. So there's a lot of talent born on this day in the history of sports, especially women's basketball.
And it's not yours, Doug?
No, mine's a month earlier. I'm a May baby. So that's a better situation for those who are want to be writers or sports writers, be born in May. But my basketball career ended in college, unfortunately. So I'm not part of that June crowd.
Doug, I want to thank you for taking some time to shoot the breeze tonight and kick around what's happened in the WNBA in the last week. We'll look forward to continuing to read all of your AP pieces wherever you can find any articles on the WNBA. You got a good shot of finding it from Doug. And of course, at Doug Feinberg is the perfect place to find everything that he would tweet about. So Doug, have a good night. Thanks again.
Thanks, Dave. Always a pleasure to chat with you.